Welcome to Machine Learning, How the World Works. I want to talk about a book called Emergence, The Connected Lives of Ants, Brains, Cities, and Software. It seems to apply more today as we start seeing the effect of large language model and adaptive behavior predictive systems, which are starting to become more mainstream. As these systems become more mainstream, we're going to be thinking about things like complexity theory and chaos theory and try to understand some of the phenomena that we're starting to see around us. Claude Shannon was influential in the discipline of information theory. There was a book I read on business, machine learning and business, and they largely spent a lot of time talking about entropy and information theory, like whether or not information was being lost through entropy or not. And I would say about half the book talked about that. And that's based on this concept of information theory that was proposed by Shannon. Now, if we apply that to pattern matching for machines, machines can be used to detect and amplify patterns in the information, thereby reducing the noise in noisy communication channels. And by reducing that noise, you reduce the entropy, and therefore you keep more information in the system. Shannon laid the foundation for understanding how information can be encoded, transmitted, and decoded. And that's largely what we're seeing with the transformer technology, is that your text is being encoded into vectors and images are being encoded into vectors, and it's passing through neural nets, and then it's recognizing the patterns that are in the data, and then through those patterns is outputting a message to us, whether that's vector information that's translating to maps and text, like prediction of next word in the sentence, or it's predicting objects associated to words. So you would take a word and then we associate that to an object. So in essence, we are still applying information theory that Shannon was talking about. By leveraging the knowledge and patterns learned during training, large language models can generate responses that align with the patterns observed in the input data. Large language models achieve this by employing various techniques such as reoccurring neural nets or transformers to capture the sequential and contextual information in the text. So in other words, they're going to encode that text or those patterns, and they do that in the form of probability on the line, and the weights on the line represent the probability of what would come next. So in the area of RNNs, they are largely used for brain code encoding. I thought that was real interesting because of their accuracy. So you can take a stream of brain code signals and encode it using RNNs, reoccurring neural nets, and it will map to a signal that the brain can understand. Likewise, you can go the opposite direction. You take signals from the brain, pass it through the encoder, and it can translate it into vectors or information that we can understand. So those vectors could do things like move a mouse on a screen, or move a robotic arm to grasp a banana, or even more fantastic would be to have some sort of cyborg interaction between the machine and the organic host and the organic host and the machine. It's important to note that the LLMs are not explicitly programmed to find patterns in the conversational text. Instead, they learn patterns explicitly through the training process. So they're paying attention to certain words and certain word patterns, and then that becomes the probability that results into things like text summarization, or in some cases, translation of what the computer can see in the multi-mode capabilities of GPT-4, like it's looking at a screen or a website and then writing the JavaScript code that will produce the user interface for that website in JavaScript. Both Shannon and Turing recognized that they had been working along parallel tracks. They were both code breakers by profession and attempting to build automated machines that could recognize patterns in audio signal or numerical sequences, creating future glimpses into intelligent machines. That's exactly what we have today, is intelligent machines that are now scaling with patterns, reasoning patterns. That's starting to become something more popular, as the need for the machine to explain its reasoning for its conclusions. One of the weaknesses that LLMs have had in the past, but not necessarily now, has been memory. They cannot remember context of the conversation. And so there's a lot of prompt engineering that's being used to help maintain that context in the conversation. Likewise, there, if you add memory and sequential sequencing, then you can create plans, and you can use the large language model to effectively execute a series of actions that will result in a goal that is part of a bigger plan. So the power of reasoning is going to be scrutinized more closely in the as we look at these large language models. Now, one of the things that I would state is this concept of emergence is, what is emergence? My definition of emergence is intelligent behavior that was unexpected but believable and within the context of the capabilities of the machine. So, for example, if you say the machine cannot reason, and then it demonstrates reasoning capability or problem-solving capability equal or greater than a human being, then you must conclude that there is a emerging behavior that was unpredicted. And why would you have that unpredicted behavior? Because in philosophy, thought is critically set to establish boundaries. And the boundaries are being established to create confinement, and the confinement then is used to create predictability, and that is considered to be stable and safe. But in the world of a dynamic system where things are getting increasingly more complex, confinement not only will prove to be an error, but it will mislead people, especially the data scientists and the computer scientists, engineers who are working on the artificial general intelligence and building systems that are capable of reasoning. And so if you take that aspect and try to contain what is reasoning, then you would have to define what is intelligence, what is reasoning, and what is emergent behavior. And that's very difficult for the world of philosophy, because the only way to do that is to criticize, meaning whether the argument is true or false. Wouldn't matter. It would just be to introduce strong bias towards the system. So you would then say machines are evil, or machines are terrible, or machines are going to take away our jobs, or machines are going to destroy humanity, etc. There has to be some sort of verbal attack without fact and without proof, and create a fantastic story like the fantastic story of evolution. And so based on that line of thinking, then it would have a inhibitor or a handicap effect on the progress of data science. So I don't think we can look to philosophy as a form of innovation or necessarily as a guide to what is capable or what machines will be providing in the near future and in the far future, because as these sequences become more complex and the behaviors become more useful, then they will be adapted and implemented, and more control will be given to the machine. And so, as I've stated before, that basically we see then machines as the guide or guiding humanity, just like a stoplight is guiding us through intersection. When you come to a four-way stop, machines will also be guiding in behavior. So things that possibly, when you look at financial transactions, you have machines that are guiding you through your financial transactions. When you look at customer service, machines are guiding you through the resolving of an issue or a concern that you may have, or a bill that you have to pay, or a service that you want. If you look in the area of finance, machines are governing in the terms of optimization and looking for areas that you may be inefficient in and showing you how to improve that efficiency. But irregardless of the patterns that are out there, there will be emerging patterns that we do not realize now in the area of possibly biotechnology, medicine, nuclear science, energy production, chemistry, medicine, physics, and even in the form of propulsion, and also maybe in the field of manufacturing efficiencies, logistic chain, supply management. These are areas where efficiencies are starting to be realized by the machine learning algorithms as they are now studying the behavior of people's data in the system and then looking for ways to improve or optimize those processes. Now, Weaver built on Shannon's ideas, creating organizational complexity theory. Organized complexity, on the other hand, is like a motorized billiards table. Billiards is those balls that you hit on a table with a pool stick. The balls follow specific rules and through their various interactions create a distinct macro behavior, arranging themselves in specific shape or form at a specified pattern over time. Weaver recognized the promise of a digital computing and knew organized complexity would be much easier to tackle once behavior could be modeled near real time. I think that's what we're talking about in predictive behavior, is behavior that can be modeled by the machine in near real time. So now, based on information provided, it seems that Weaver built on Shannon's ideas to develop organization complexity theory. Weaver recognized the potential of digital computing in tackling organized complexity, which can be compared to a motorized billiards table where balls follow specific rules and create distinct macro behaviors or patterns over time. See, as machines start to write their own code, you can think of that as behavioral programming. They write their own code, and then following specific rules, they arrange those modules following those rules to achieve a specific goal. And then within those set of goals, they organize to a specific plan. Now, you're limited to the hard drive space and the energy required for the machine to build those patterns. And you also have to have some guide by which the rules are established and the goals established. But once those are done, you do have a theory very similar to what Weaver was talking about, where the modules become complex, interwoven, and measured against the goals and the rules for the outcomes and adjust accordingly. And as a result, you will have systems that have macro behavior. And those macro behaviors could be from things to driving a car, to running the HVAC system of an organization, to flying a plane, to driving a semi, to running an ERP system. So without any human intervention, completely running the whole ERP system from AR, AP, HR, all the way down, and having the digital interactions with other systems in an automated manner for receiving input into a system and sending output to other systems. Okay, so there's a lot of possibilities. We have advancements in digital computing. As digital computing continues to advance, it becomes increasingly capable of modeling and simulating complex systems in real time. Now, I've said this for several decades, that the system that moves to real time will be the system that wins. So if I were to predict what machine learning will do over the future, I will predict that machine learning will be pervasive over all software development, and eventually there will be systems that are completely written by machines that are preferred because of their macro behaviors that they will provide. Integration of big data, the ability of large data sets and the ability to analyze them using advanced algorithms can provide valuable insights into organization complexity. By analyzing vast amounts of data, researchers can identify patterns, relations, and emerging behaviors in complex systems. So if that were true, the emerging behaviors that we've been talking about, according to Weaver and Shannon, should be in the data if the data set is large enough. That's the assumption there. Interdisciplinary collaboration. The study of organized complexity often requires collaboration between different disciplines, such as computer science, mathematics, physics, and biology. As interdisciplinary collaboration continues to grow, researchers can leverage diverse perspectives and expertise to gain deeper understanding of complex systems. Practical application. The understanding of organized complexity can have practical applications in the fields of biology, economics, social sciences, and engineering. By applying the principles of organization complexity theory, researchers can develop innovative solutions, optimize processes, and make informed decisions in complex systems. That's exactly what we're seeing right now in the startups with AI and machine learning, is that they are optimizing these processes and seeking to gain market capitalization by the values that they're offering various companies through the services that they provide. The statement about random graph theory highlights the importance of understanding the properties of behavior of real-world networks. It introduces the concept of random graphs, which are networks formed by randomly connecting nodes with edges. You know, this is interesting because we're entering in now the age of IoT, Internet of Things, and now if you put neural nets on the edge of those nodes, then in essence, will you be randomly connecting nodes with the edge, and will that then start to facilitate a change in the behavior? Will it propagate the flow of information? Will it propagate behavior discovery or patterns in the data? The statement emphasizes the significance of random graph theory in understanding real-world networks. It suggests that networks can provide insights into various phenomena, including the flow of information, disease propagation, and the spread of social norms. Okay, a giant component refers to connected subgraphs that contain a significant portion of nodes in the network. The statement suggests that the presence of a giant component is significant because it means whatever happens at one location in the network has the potential to affect any other location. And so you desire to be on that network so that you could get the information, but that getting that information could affect the behavior of the individual or group receiving that individual information. For example, when COVID hit, there was the network was going out, probably New York Times, and it was providing a lot of the information that was then being analyzed by the data science to scientists to make predictions of what COVID was going to do and the mortality rates. So it was directly affecting our perceptions as to what was happening as that data was flowing through the network. A giant component is connected as the subgraphs that contain significant portions of nodes on the network. A giant component is significant because it implies that events or information at one location in the network can potentially impact any other location. Okay, what about critical points in the random graph theory? A critical point represents a phase transition from an unconnected network to a connected one. So basically you have these connected networks, it looks like snowflake, and then you have these snowflakes that kind of migrate over to the connected network and then interface and connect to them. As a result, you're going to have a bigger network, a giant graph, and at that point, then you have the behavior of the giant graph. A small number of links near the critical point can have a profound effect on the network structure, connecting many small clusters into a single giant component. This sudden jump from unconnected to connected highlights the importance of a threshold between isolation and connectedness in various aspects of modern society. Now, MIT's Oliver Selfrig was experimenting with trying to teach a computer to learn. Selfridge was concerned how machines learn. The problem was how to teach a computer to recognize patterns that were ill-defined or erratic, like sound waves that comprise the spoken language. Now, you notice that voice and sound waves have, because of the larger data set, have been very good at recognizing the words. I can speak into Siri about as fast as I can possibly talk, and it can pick up all of the sounds, and it can translate those sounds through the deep learning network fast enough to translate that back into words. And then based on the sequence of words, it can predict what the next word would probably be. So it'll correct as you get more words in the sequence. Selfridge introduced feedback that allowed the programs to grade various guesses. So in the example what I was talking about, the results are fed back into the input with additional words, and then the network will correct for the errors in the words based on the probability of what would be the next word. The lower-level algorithms will be less sophisticated mini-programs trained only to recognize raw shapes or sounds. The lower-level programs recognize parallel lines and perpendicular lines, other circles, and other dots. The lower-level programs report on shapes they saw. The system can be trained to recognize letters without knowing anything about the alphabet in advance. If the guess is wrong, the lower-level program is disassociated. If the guess is right, it strengthens the association between the mini-program. John Holland wanted to explore the way simple rules can lead to complex behavior. I think that that's starting to emerge now. I think with ADEPT, we're going to see these simple rules that will hold up either in genetic engineering or in biotech, or in complex tasking, and as a result of those simple rules holding up, we're going to gain predictability. Holland set up a gene pool of possible software and let successful programs improve. Computer DNA selection model worked by creating a massive pool of genetic variations, then evolved the success rates of the associated behaviors unleashed by the genes. This is a lot like bagging theory or assembly theory, is that the different lower levels vote, like in the different types of trees, they vote, and the majority wins. Successful variations get passed down to the next generation, while unsuccessful ones disappear. the innovation combination of genes find each other. Occasionally, random mutations appear in the gene pool, introducing completely new avenues for the system to explore. The programmer decides what task was necessary for the program to solve, but did not instruct the software exactly how to solve it. So we've seen this with computers learning how to walk, or computers learning how to swim, or computers that are learning how to fight, like a box or to sword fight, that they go through this iterative process. But if you notice, the predictive behaviors now are being introduced and they learn quicker. For example, with the Boston Dynamics, they've moved away from just kind of like general neural nets to almost a perception-based system where a goal is given and a conditioned response is provided as a feedback. So if the robot makes predictive behaviors that reach the goal, then it's rewarded. Otherwise, it is not rewarded, and then it will try to do another predictive behavior that might have better success. Somehow we came up with the idea of following a trail and not just a clean trail, a noisy trail, and a broken trail. The two scientists created a virtual grid of squares, drawing a meandering path of 82 squares across it. The goal was to evolve a simple program, a virtual ant, that could navigate the length of the path in a finite amount of time. Now, one of the things that the ant's going to have a problem with is it's expending energy. So as it expends energy, it has to find food in order to replenish the energy that it's losing. So its goal is not only to get across the path, but also to find food and to get across the path. The scoring of the ant's performance was fed into a fitness criteria, which determined the virtual ant's survival. The simulation began with 16,000 virtual ants. Jefferson said, "We had no idea when we started this experiment, some 16,000 was anywhere near a large enough population to seek Darwin evolution." So it's a genetic algorithm that they're following. The first 100 generations took 2 hours. The software had evolved a population of expert trail finders. It's kind of like the way ants work now, is they have expert trail finders, and then they leave a pheromone trail for other ants to follow, and that affects then the behavior of the group, larger group. Mitch Resnick built a computer simulation of slime mold behavior. Slime mold cells collectively decide to aggregate based on their encounters with pheromone trails, and by keeping the trails short and the cells few, the slime cells will refuse to come together. When the duration of the trails was turned up and the number of agents increased to a certain point, the organization complexity phase transition occurred suddenly. There's that emerging behavior. The long range connected suggested plug more minds into the system and give their work a longer, more durable trail by publishing their ideas in best-selling books or founding research centers to explore these ideas. And before long, the system arrives at phase training. So again, reputation of the experts then puts them in a place like, the say, TED Talks, and other experts hear what the expert is saying, and then those ideas then are passed through the organization, just like ants, expert ants are finding food along the way. I think with large language models and like sites like this with the podcast, that it's starting to affect the minds of experts, and they're starting to realize that the potential of AI is far more than what the media has portrayed it as. And there's far more applications right now that can be built that could be useful. While there's no single key to the success of social insects, the collective intelligence of the colony system certainly play an essential role. Call it swarm logic. A harvest ant will not assert the shortest route to a food source. It will also prioritize food sources based on their distance and ease of access. In response to changing external conditions, worker ants switch from nest building to foraging to raise ant pupa. None of the individual ants are in charge. Deborah Gordon became interested and said, I was interested in a system where individuals who are unable to assess the global situation still work together in a coordinated way. They manage to do it using only local information. Harvest ants constant adjust the number of ants actively foraging for food. Based on the number of variables, the overall colony size, the amount of food stored in the nest, the amount of food available in surrounding area, even the vicinity where colonies in nearby vicinity, ants secrete a finite number of chemicals, and these chemical signals are used to communicate with other ants. A foraging ant might expect it to meet three other foragers per minute if she encounters more than three. She might follow a rule that has her return to the nest. Now, again, these are the rules that we talked about that result in this emerging behavior or the behavior of a large system. So you can have these simple rules that can lead to complex behaviors, and those complex behaviors then can be identified in the organization of the ants. Now, based on the pheromone signals and frequency, the ant can adjust its behavior. The statistical nature of the ant interaction demands that there be a critical mass of ants for the colony to make intelligent assessment of the global state. So in other words, there has to be enough brains with enough ideas in the system to sustain the development of creativity or the abstract thought so that the system does not become chaotic and fall into disarray. So the network itself then would be made available to the whole world, because that would give you more ideas and access to the network. And so in that sense, that emerging behavior occurs as more people join in on the network. Emergent systems can grow unwieldy and their components can become excessively complex. And when you see that, you can see data centers where the networks get too complex and they can't handle the load. And so you see lots of network error messages start to creep up. And so they have to then rebalance the complexity of the system and come up with new ways to handle load by creating containers, and then using those containers to handle containerizing, and then using that to handle the load. Now, if we look at birds, for example, flocks of birds, they have a complex understanding of the world in order to fly. They fly by simple rules. As each bird interacts with its neighbor, the flock as a whole is able to navigate its environment effectively. So there's rules of flocking. Decentralized systems rely heavily on random interactions of ants exploring a given space without any predefined orders. Yeah, because they're not being told what to do. They're just following these simple rules. And as a result of them, they're creating a macro state of the system. Looking for patterns and signs, ants rely heavily on patterns in the semiochemicals they detect. The ant's knack for pattern detection allows meta information to circulate through the colony. Paying attention to the neighbors, local wisdom can lead to global wisdom. The primary mechanism of swarm logic is the interaction between neighboring ants in the field. Ants stumble across each other or each other's pheromone trails while patrolling the area around the nest. Adding ants to the overall system will generate more interactions between the neighbors and will consequently enable the colony itself to solve problems and regulate itself more efficiently. And that's the proposition of artificial stability. Stupidity is that the only two things that really matter is the network and connection to the network and voice recognition. So, and why is that? Well, connection to the network will allow for more ideas to affect the network, and as one idea enters the network, it can have effect on another part of that network.